Welcome to the Public Works Nerds Podcast.
Welcome to the Public Works Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Culver, and I'm here again today welcoming back Deb Heiser, who's been a guest and a co-host already in this short podcast journey we've had to date. But Deb is going to join me once again, and we're kind of just put together this quick episode. We decided we were going to talk about a really cool organization called the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. But before we get there, just as a reminder, Deb's the engineering director for the City of St. Louis Park in Minnesota. And if you haven't already listened to this or watched it on our YouTube channel, go back, listen to our sixth episode from July 4th, Independence Day, where we talked with Deb about experiments in neighborhood traffic control and using big data. Good episode, some good laughs in there. But and then Deb, of course, you were my co-host for the episode we dropped last week with Paul Pasco. Yep. So welcome back. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mark, for that introduction, and I'm excited to be here today.
You're excited to be here every day, every time.
Well, and it's a great conversation to be had about the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. It's a wonderful organization, yeah. And I think we both have been members for,
a while.
20-plus years.
Yeah, so. I think I'm technically in my 21st year, because I'm pretty sure I became a member as soon as I joined City of Maple Grove. So probably in my 21st year. And you probably...
I joined in 1998, so wow. I've been a member now for 25 years this November. So
there you go.
Yep.
There you go. You're finally on the board.
Yes. Very exciting. And so again, the wonderful thing about the City Engineers is that we have... a leadership, the executive committee that is elected from among the membership. And one of the challenges, one of the fun parts about all of this is that we get to work together and we get to provide guidance for a lot of different things. And we're going to kind of get on that a little bit. And we've got the screening board and the gas tax, and there's legislative and lobbying and professional ethics and standards. There's all sorts of things the City Engineers is involved with.
So. Yeah. So, you know, just kind of taking a review. Okay, so City Engineer Association, if you're really interested, CEAM
.org.
Yeah. I think it's CEAM-MN.org. Is that right?
Or is it CEAM.org. They kept it simple. They didn't want to get that dash in there. It's, you know.
And before I did this, I wanted to kind of read just from the history of that webpage. The history of City Engineers Association, our history. So what does it say? It says it was first established on September 10th, 1954, which actually surprised me a little bit. So it's a couple of years before the whole screening board and gas tax thing kicked in, and we'll get a little bit more of that in a few minutes here. But in Breezy Point, Minnesota, way up north there, the City and Village Engineers Association of Minnesota, as apparently City Engineers was first called, had two main goals and in establishing the City Engineers Association. One, to find out the ways and means whereby we can render the maximum service to our respective cities and villages where a civil engineer is one of the regularly appointed city officials, and to extend said service to other cities and villages where the need is evident for a civil engineer on a full-time basis. Yeah, that's really exciting. You could tell this is written in the...
Right? Not very hip at all. I'll read the mission now as you're done reading the 1954. So.
Yeah. And then the second thing was to better the position of a city or a village engineer from the standpoint of economic, civic, tenure, and social standing. So I think, you know, going way back then, there was really an intentional effort to provide opportunities for appointed city engineers and to provide an opportunity for those engineers to learn from each other and get together and talk about things and shared issues and such. So why don't you go ahead and read the current.
Yeah, and let me just kind of just plug a little bit. You know, the City Engineers SEAM, I'm going to call it SEAM, right? To make it easier, a lot less words. SEAM is unique. You know, we are not affiliated with a large national group. So you look at the National Association of County Engineers, we are unique in that way. The membership continues to stay strong, and we've got very limited resources. The boards volunteer, And, you know, when you look at that, it's a really well-run organization, not just because we've both been on the executive committee,
right.
But there's been leadership all 25 years I've been a member. So let's just talk about the mission. To further the education and the welfare of each other. And that's
I love the way that's set.
Yeah,
each other.
Of each
yeah.
other. To promote the interchange of helpful ideas and information. To work constructively. You know, either we're
pun intended.
Pun intended.
Yep. Yep.
To work constructively towards the advancement and improvement of the engineering profession. To seek ways and means by which we may be more useful and efficient to those to whom we serve.
Yep. That's great.
A little more hip, a little more action words in there than the legislation.
Yep. And that's it?
That's it.
That's it. Okay.
Oh, come on. That's
But that's very good. That's very good. I didn't mean to imply there should be more. I just wanted to make sure you were done. No, and I think you made a really good point that, you know, the City Engineers Association of Minnesota, or SEAM, is not affiliated with a national organization. And I did a little bit of a Google search on municipal engineer associations or city engineer associations, and there are a few other ones out there in the U.S. There, interestingly enough, there's a New Jersey Society of Municipal Engineers, and there's also an Ohio or a Municipal Engineers Association of Ohio, which is affiliated with the Ohio League, I believe. And I think that's even us at the city at SEAM. We have I wouldn't say it's a formal affiliation or association with the League of Minnesota Cities, but we use resources
yeah.
from the League of Minnesota Cities. We work together on advocating for funding or policy changes. The League actually is very good on helping us become aware of issues that will come up, particularly of a legislative nature, so that we can respond to those. We can send people down to the Capitol to testify on for or in opposition of proposed legislation, or just, you know, generally advocate for additional funding, whether that's transportation funding or stormwater or sewer water funding, what have you. We have a really good relationship on there. But there's not a formal, I don't think we're in a like an affiliate organization of the League, are we?
Well, so from a legislative perspective,
yep.
You know, again, just to let people know, we have a number of committees in SEAM, and the legislative committee is one which actually Mark does a really wonderful job of chairing.
Yeah, somebody chairs that.
Somebody
named Mark Culver chairs
yeah.
that. Yeah,
and so the League of Minnesota Cities, actually the SEAM has a contract with them for just administration. So they handle our finances. Yep. But really, when it comes to this legislative portion, it's about helping each other.
Yeah.
The League of Minnesota Cities, and this could be another conversation.
Yep.
Majority of the cities in Minnesota are a part of the League of Minnesota
yes.
Cities, and they provide insurance and they provide lobbying and guidance and policy direction, and they do an excellent job for the communities in Minnesota, and they have this whole and I'm going to totally mess it up lobbying group. It's the G.
Anyway,
there's an initials for that. I apologize.
Yes.
But they have a lobbying group. And when things come up, and if you've ever been engaged in the legislature or gone to testify at the Capitol, it is fast and furious.
Intergovernmental relations.
IGR. There's the acronyms are so much
yep.
fun. But the thing is that when the issues come up that'll affect cities, will affect our profession, will affect, you know, the funding, will affect our roads, whatever it is, speed limits.
Mm-hmm.
that group, the League, wants the experts there.
Yep.
And having that relationship, whether it's, you know, especially with legislative, it's very loosely affiliated. We can go down and testify and be experts. And I think it's very well received by our legislators.
Yeah. And it gets a little interesting because the League is very organized and very formal. They have a board of directors mm-hmm. that is made up of elected officials and other appointed officials. And they spend a lot of time coming up with a legislative agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those items are related to engineering items. A lot aren't. But I don't want to say we conflict sometimes, but there are times where something will come up that the League doesn't have a position on that we feel very strongly about. And you mentioned speed limits. Speed limits was a great example. And this was back in 2019, I believe it was, the year before COVID. There was a proposed legislation to give cities the authority to set their own speed limits on their roadways, the roadways that were under their jurisdiction, not county roadways, not state roadways, but just city streets. And we did not want that authority. You know, we felt very strongly as engineers that we should not have that authority. We had a very established procedure for setting speed limits. And I personally, and I think a lot of other people in our organization, but I know there were a lot of people in our organization that didn't necessarily feel this way, felt that we should probably look at changing your statutory speed limit to 25 miles per hour because it's at 30. But that was not what the legislature wanted to do. And they were tired of hearing from the engineers that we can't do this, that we can't give cities the authority to do this. And so they kind of, and the league just said, you know what, we don't have a position on this. Our board doesn't have a position on this. And part of that is because there's a group of cities that want that authority.
Yep.
And there's a group of cities that don't want that authority. And so there is disagreement and there's not a consensus position. And so the league can't take a position. And so we're kind of standing out there by ourselves. But they still helped us, set up testimony opportunities.
Yes.
and give us, gave us an opportunity to talk to some legislators in that. And so they still helped us in that regard. But they did not formally have a position, so they weren't helping us lobby one way or the other.
Well, and the challenge, I think, sometimes in whether it's SEAM or the league or any organization, and is that, SEAM has 350 members, and yeah. So in the league has, I'm not sure how many cities are a member of the league.
A lot.
How do you build consensus? It's that same thing. Is that each of the cities have their own boards and their councils, and the league has the same thing. So there's a lot of things that all the cities can agree on.
Yep.
Local control.
Yep.
And I think that this is a great example of how sometimes in the legislature, even in an organization, how do you build consensus among 350 people?
And yeah.
I remember when you had people raise hands at the conference. How many people think it should be this way? And I don't think you had 50% that said yes either way.
No.
And
no.
So that's the real interesting thing when it comes to those matters.
Right. And what's interesting about that, like you said, is, it's usually, we try to, when we are testifying in front of the state senator and the state House of Representatives, we try to get the president out there or somebody that's on the executive committee or the board. But all of those members, like you are currently on the executive committee. You're the secretary.
Yep.
You will be the president in 2 years. I was the president in 2017 of SEAM, and I was an employee of the city of Roseville at the time. You are an employee of the city of St. Louis Park, so you can't necessarily go down to the Capitol and just completely remove yourself from your day job as the director of engineering for the city of St. Louis Park and the city engineer. And so that gets into a situation where, as an organization, we may have that consensus. We may feel very strongly about a certain position, but we may not think our city, our city council of the city that we work for feels that same way. And it kind of puts us in an odd scenario because we don't ever want to go there and give the impression that we're representing our city for a position that they may not be in favor of.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird. It puts us in kind of a strange position in those lobbying efforts. But again, generally we can find somebody else that isn't in a conflicting situation like that. We just have a really great roster of engineers that we can tap to help us with that as far as testifying in that. So we kind of got off on a tangent.
We went down legislative committee.
On the legislative side, but
there are other committees, Mark.
There are. I know. It's the committee. Let's be honest.
To be honest, yeah. It's probably. And I'm teasing Mark.
No.
It is the committee that probably has the most activity.
Yeah.
Coming back to the mission is about helping each other. Coming back to that mission is about furthering the professionalism in our organization.
But we do other things.
We have a water resources committee. Yes. I mean, we have the leadership by Dan Edgerton. It talks about, you know, rulemaking, whether there's a new NPDES permit coming up or the MPCA, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit.
Very nice.
Yeah, there you go. I know all the initials. And then there's the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. You know, what are the rules? We had the Department of Labor and Industry, and we had some situations occurring with some interpretations of rules with that. And so the Water Resources Committee was very involved with that, trying to stay on top of those changes and speaking about what the unintended consequences could be. We have a scholarship. I mean, that's another thing to further our profession. We have a scholarship committee, and we have $21,000 a year that we give out to students, whether they're technical backgrounds or civil engineers. Standards and specifications. And I think this is unique. You can tell me if in your research, we have SEAM standards. So in general in Minnesota, and I'm not sure what it's like in other states or even across the world. I've only lived in Minnesota. We have for the most part, cities and counties will use MnDOT specs for our building, for construction.
Right. Standard specifications
yeah. that are MnDOT.
Contract language.
Yeah, et cetera, and so on. Just kind of keep it simple, make it easy for the contractors. We also, though, the MnDOT doesn't have sanitary sewer and water main.
Right.
And so we have a SEAM standards. We have SEAM specifications for utilities. And there's a whole committee that reviews those, updates them, keeps on top of, you know, whether it's ASTI standards or whatever the case may be. And I think that that's really helps us be competitive with bidding for contractors. Because, if you go to Roseville, it's a different rule than if you go to St. Louis Park. Or, you know, this way it's more standardized. It's easy for contractors. It makes us competitive.
Yeah. And again, there's that technical aspect of it, too, because, you know, the specifications do get into some of the details such as pipe material and things like that. And so it really helps, you know, maybe a younger engineer or you know, community that's maybe starting to do some of their own projects for the first time, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to go do that research of, you know, what's working, what's not working. They can use those standard specifications. And you can still use the SEAM standard specifications as like the default, yeah. And then go in and make changes to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I use water as hydrants. Those are the best.
Right.
Another city would say, no.
Yeah,
cloud is the way to go.
Right.
So, sorry, that's a shameless plug, isn't it?
It's okay. But you're right. It's kind of like some people love Apple phones and some people love Android. it's just one of those things.
But it's again, this is how we can be more useful and more efficient for those that we serve. You know,
yeah.
It's no reinventing the wheel. It's always easier to plagiarize than it is to, I'm sorry, not plagiarize, to build on somebody else's work.
Yes. But yeah, and so it's just really interesting, each of these committees has a chair and then there are several members And, you know, it's not like there's strict membership rules or anything else like that. If you're really interested in water resources, or we have a traffic safety committee that has quite a few members in that. And with, you know, Tim Plath from Egan chairs that one.
We just had a webinar with the traffic safety committee led on, it's coming up. The SEAM does 4 webinars a year.
Right. Talk about speed limits.
Talk about speed limits. Yeah. Just a full circle on that.
Yep.
But, so there is, some real strength with these volunteers. These are all volunteers. The leadership, Tim Plath, the traffic safety, Paul Hornby is the standards and specifications. Am I missing any water resources?
I think the probably besides the legislative committee, the most active, we have a communications and website.
That's right.
Too. Yep. Yes. Mike Turner from SRF is on that, or chairs that one. But probably the most active committee is the annual conference planning committee.
Oh.
And I think that really highlights one of the outstanding products of SEAM is our annual meeting. And we always have an annual meeting. Starts the last Wednesday of January every year. And, you know, it's 3 days. And it's really geared towards municipal engineering. So, you know, so it's the whole gamut of topics, you know, getting into water resources, getting into water distribution and sanitary sewer and transportation. But we also do some really good leadership sessions. We talk about asset management and GIS and just, you know, a really wide variety of topics. And I personally think, and of course I'm biased, but I personally think that that's one of the best conferences, you know, that is out there on a regular basis.
And I agree. I, you know, as far as conferences are concerned, just cutting edge, really looking at how to, that building, again, how can we help each other, educate each other? Recently, we started to do a 101. So we do these wonderful things about these amazing projects that are going on around the Twin Cities, the Highland Bridge in St. Paul, and all the innovations that were completed with the Ford plant redevelopment. That was a very interesting session that was done in a, you know, just how they tackled the problems of brownfield development. We have the new rules, you know, what the new permits are going to mean for us from a city's perspective. And so a lot of these things are just new information, but we've started going so far as to do a 101 for maybe the younger engineers or the field staff or technicians that are coming in to learn about things such as financing. You know, what is out there is financing. You hear bonding. What is TIF?
Right.
You know, I mean, tax increment financing.
Yep.
And really, those are just things that when I was just starting out 25 years ago, you know, I learned them through asking the finance director, through, you know, trial and error and et cetera and so on. Google or whatever.
Yeah.
And so getting that information so that these young engineers can learn. So we've been trying to cater and be very nimble with what we're doing. It's not all technical, the coefficient of H and,
And to be honest with you, not a lot of it actually is. You know, it's, you know, one of the sessions we had two sessions last year that I thought were really interesting that kind of built on that. And in kind of that format, we had a contracting 101.
Yes.
You know, like what are the basic levels of contracting and some of the state limitations or, you know, legal limitations for cities to contract and this, that, and the other. But then we had like a graduate level contracting session as well, talking about a little bit more innovative contracting methods like design build.
Yeah.
When can a city use the design build contracting method? Even procurement, like when can you use a best value procurement method for hiring a contractor? And those are some really interesting things that, you know, newer engineers may not have any experience with or really understand when they can or cannot use it. And so then they're not thinking about that.
Yep.
As they're putting their projects together.
And we teach each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the strength of the organization. It's the networking that is really important as well. We had, and again, during COVID, we had one year where we went virtual. And it was a great conference. But the thing I missed the most was connecting and having those side conversations. And whether it was agreeing or disagreeing with the colleagues, you know, I thought that was a great session. And this is why we do it that way. Well, that's ridiculous. Why do you do it that way? But to have those point counterpoint conversations, that's another strength of the organization as well as the conferences that are put on. But it's interesting. I did not mean to dismiss the planning committee, because to me that is just such a dedicated group of people. I think there's 40 people on the planning committee.
It's a very large number,
yeah.
And it's a little bit fluid. But we have some people that have been on there forever. Eric Seberg from Bolton Mank is the co-chair, and it's an interesting setup because the vice president is always a co-chair, and then we have a more regular co-chair, and he took over recently from Joe Ryan, who ran this thing for ages, and he had these spreadsheets and he just spent so much time on it and so much effort, and there was a lot of passion there from him. So owe Joe a lot for a lot of great conferences and such. But what's really great about it is it's a really broad representation from the consultants that are involved in you know, municipal engineering in Minnesota. And from, you know, all levels of cities, in the metro and outstate and everything. It's just a really great cross section of people involved in SEAM and in municipal engineering in Minnesota. So that's how we come up with such great sessions. because there's a lot of great ideas. And like you said, it's that networking and meeting people so that when you do, you know, or you go to a session on alternative contracting or something like that, or water resources permitting or something like that, and then you go back and you're working, and like 6 months later, like a question comes up, and you're like, oh crap, what was that? Or geez, I don't remember what I should do, or, you know, kind of worried about this. And you call the person up, you know what? And they pick up the phone and they're happy to help.
Exactly.
And you know,
I think that that says so much for our profession.
Yeah.
And the our colleagues is that I have never been turned down when I made that phone call.
Right.
It's like, you did this thing. Could you send me the presentation?
Yeah.
It was stripping of seal quotes, you know, and it was just, you know, even to the point, would you want to come and just talk about it? We can come on over. We, we'll walk through what we did. And
I mean, that's, it's, you touched on stuff like we recently had a conversation with the last few weeks. You called me up and like, what was going on with the stripping in Roseville? And we could do a whole podcast.
I'm sorry, delamination.
Seal code delamination.
Yeah,
slash delamination, stripping.
Yeah.
And you called up, you know, the street superintendent, you know, Steve Weber, the great Steve Weber at Roseville. And he took you out and he showed you, you know, what was going on in Roseville and the different stages of it and how they were treating it. And that's the kind of relationship, like you said, nobody is going to turn you down.
Yep. And it's about, you know, I know who the city engineer is of St. Paul. I know who the city engineer of Hopkins or, and recognizing, I think Hopkins did that, or I think Minnetonka was working on that, and being able to, you know, learn from each other.
Right.
But I think the other part, you know, and we've been talking a lot about the planning committee. And so just from a structure perspective, we have an executive committee. You mentioned I was very honored to be elected as the secretary treasurer this year. So I've been serving this year as a secretary treasurer. And I love doing minutes.
I bet you do. Everybody loves doing minutes when they do them.
And then moving on to the vice president, is the co-chair of the planning committee, as you'd mentioned. And then moving on to the president of the organization. And what I'm The thing is that why they were created. So 1954, we were created to help with standards and also the gas tax.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. I just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, Bolton & Mink, who is producing and editing our podcast.
At Bolton & Mink, we believe all people should live in a safe, sustainable, and beautiful community. We promise every client two things. We'll work hard for you, and we'll do a good job. We take a personal interest in the work being done around us. And at the end of the day, we're real people offering real solutions.
And I think that's a great segue into the other committee that is officially listed on our the SEAM committee webpage is the Municipal Screening Board. And what the hell is a Municipal Screening Board?
And there's absolutely no screens involved.
No, I have no idea where they came up with the word screening.
It doesn't really describe what we do.
No.
But.
No. So, go ahead.
Yeah.
Talk about what is the Municipal Screening Board, Devin? So, what is our role in distributing the gas tax in Minnesota?
So, I have been, again, had the honor of serving both as a district representative on the screening board. And then this year, I'm on the screening board as a part of the, I forget what we're called, the board, the actual governing board, the people who go up there and get to take minutes and call to order.
Yeah.
But what the screening board does.
Officers.
Officers. Thank you. We're technically the secretary treasurer, the vice chair, and the
chair.
President.
Chair.
The
vice chair.
Yep.
Secretary.
Yeah. So we mirror the same roles in the organization that we do with the Municipal Screening Board. But the idea behind it is that there are volunteers from every district in the state. We have MnDOT districts. It's broken out according to district. There's a Metro West, a Metro East, but then also cities of the first class are represented on the screening board. And that, I believe, is the population is 200,000.
Over 100,000.
Over 100,000.
Yeah.
So any city that has over 100,000 population automatically gets a seat at the table.
Which in Minnesota is not. We have
Rochester,
four active,
Duluth, St. Paul, and Minneapolis.
Right. And Duluth is technically under 100,000. Mm-hmm. But I think it's one of those things where once a first class city, always a first class city. And nobody has challenged that, but I think Duluth is down into the 80,000 something population.
So there's 13 members of the screening board, And this group sits down and talks about, okay, we get this gas tax. We get, and you can talk about the percentages. How are we going to divide that among the districts? How are we going to divide that among the cities? What are the needs? How do we establish how the money gets, how that, you know, the money goes into a pot. The money becomes baked into a pie. How do we slice that pie?
Yeah. And I would love those of you that are listening to this podcast that are not in the state of Minnesota, or even if you are and you have experience in other states about how that gas tax is distributed within other states in your state, you know, comment on whether that's in YouTube or on LinkedIn or something, comment on our page and let us know, you know, how that distribution works. Because I'd love to make some comparisons to how Minnesota does it and other states. And the really interesting about Minnesota, and I'd love to hear about how other states may be like this or not, is the legislature decided that when the gas tax was established, the distribution wouldn't just be based on population or miles of road, but it would be based on needs. Like, what are your actual needs to replace your transportation system? Mm-hmm. And in Minnesota, or for cities, we're only allowed to designate 20% of our total mileage as 20.
Right. You're right.
20% of our total mileage can be designated as state aid routes. And those are the roads that we can spend the gas tax money on for construction. And so we go through a huge exercise, and it used to be a lot more complicated. We have a website where we're filling in like literally linear feet of curb.
How much sidewalk? How many streetlights?
Right. How many street
signals?
Traffic signals.
What's the grading factors?
The soil factor. Uh-huh. Just all of these getting into the weeds. Talk about, you know, equations and such. And that would generate a dollar amount of what you need to replace your transportation system or that state aid system.
But to further that, once you went through all the machinations to calculate your need, you got $10.80 for every $1,000 worth.
You do it today. You do
today. That was before the legislature increased the gas tax.
Yeah, but back in 1958, when this all started, you know, there were only, just to kind of where we started from a municipal standpoint, and there's a whole different system for our county state aid system. On how they get their gas.
We are focusing on cities here.
Yeah, but we'll do a separate podcast on the CASA system sometime, and I'll just berate them the whole time. but there are, you know, in 1958, there were 58 state aid cities. So there were 58 cities over 5,000 population, which is a qualification for a state aid city. And there were 920 miles in this need system. And that actual construction needs dollar amount for all of those 58 cities was $190 million. All right. And so they were getting $19.14. Their actual portion, the actual amount of money they got in that year was equal to $19.14 per $1,000 of needs. All right. So if your city, of that $190 million, if your city had $10 million in needs, then you'd get 10,000 times 19.14, you know, so $190,000, if my math's correct there. Today, all right, in 2020, did I not clip the whole thing? Hang on here. Today, we have 151 cities over 5,000. So this is the good thing. You know, we have growth in our state. We have cities that are every year that are, you know, seeing an increase in their population. And so today we've added
60-ish cities.
Well, actually 90-something. From
86 again.
To 151. Yeah. So seven less than 100. Yeah. So 93. We've added 93 cities in 70 years or 65 years or whatever that is. And now, you know, we have 3,877 miles of streets that are collecting needs, and we have $10 billion of needs. And now our needs per $1,000 is down to $10.54 per. So you would think that over 65 years, just by inflation, that number should be getting bigger.
But I will say, absolutely, that is true. And the wonderful news is that, again, I would appreciate feedback from others in the nation and internationally. I don't know that every state has a gas tax.
Right.
And when you look at it, we aren't trying to do sour grapes here. It's just that this is the state
we're
of
totally
our
good
this is this is the state of our infrastructure. We have, you know, the city of St. Louis Park has about 150 miles of streets. The condition of those streets, you know, are under 60 from an average perspective. And you look at what the funding needs are, just that what we're talking about right now is just the streets that are that 20%. In the city of St. Louis Park, we have 33 miles of state aid streets. So 120 miles of streets don't get this gas tax dollars, and we have to pay for those locally. We have to use our other money for it. And that's the bottom line, is that it's a state of our infrastructure, and it's great to have a gas tax. Yes. But when you look at even the federal gas tax, is it really taking care of what we have?
No, and it's not. Yeah. And I mean, clearly, I mean, it's at, you know, the federal gas tax is 18.5 cents per gallon, and that hasn't gone up since when?
Yeah.
You know, I saw the number not that long ago. I don't remember it, but it's been a long time.
So we are really excited then for this year, and the legislature this year actually is indexing the gas tax. This is the first time, you know, in the history of the gas tax, which was,
you know,
huge.
Just a 120 second offshoot here on the legislative process going into the final weeks and even the final days of the legislative session. And we have this massive transportation omnibus bill. And we're all just trying to keep up with all the proposals and everything. You know, a proposal from the House, a proposal from the Senate comes together in a conference committee to try to hash out the differences. And nowhere in there is an increase in gas tax. Nowhere on either bill from the House to the Senate is there an increase in the gas tax. There's other funding sources like a 50 cent delivery fee and some other things, and an increase in the registration.
Small cities account.
Okay, yeah. There's all sorts of other stuff in there, but there was nothing in. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of the conference committee comes an indexed gas tax. And we're all just like, boom. Yeah. Yeah. And now we're not complaining.
No. Okay. This is like the best thing that ever happened.
Right.
I did the 10-year projection for the city of St. Louis Park.
Yeah.
Holy Hannah. I mean, we are finally going to catch up.
Really?
Yes.
Like, so give me some numbers
off
the top of your head.
Off the top of my head. So if with an index, so we've got the projections from state aid end of June. And so it starts out, we usually get $1.4 million a year. Then it goes to, I think we get an additional $100,000 in 22. So 2024, it'll be like almost 1480-ish. Then it goes to 15 something or 1.5 million something. Mm-hmm. And it keeps... You know, they're saying no more than 3%. But I was projecting, what if we did get 3%? What, you know, looking at how inflation has affected us over the last 5 years in construction, if we get 3% a year, I think we're going to finally be able to do what we need to do with our construction.
Yeah, yeah. And
so I think we were getting in, you know, within that 10-year, we were getting $2 million a year in construction.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other factors involved with that. I mean, these are all projections. And we're all buying, hopefully, people are all buying more fuel-efficient vehicles, and we're getting electrified vehicles and hybrid vehicles and such. And, you know, and that will lower the revenue. And that is a national conversation that's going on. It's a conversation that's been going on for the last 20 years as far as what is the next evolution of the gas tax? How are we going to collect revenue for our transportation system?
Is this sustainable? You know, that's assuming everybody in 10 years is still going to have a gas car.
Well, right. And we need to figure out a different way. And there are even pieces of the legislation, this transportation bill that came out in 2023 in Minnesota, recognizes that. And they were trying to find alternative funding sources, recognizing that the gas tax is an eroding revenue source. And that's the increase in the registration fee.
Well, on the delivery fee. So they actually have added a delivery fee, and that funding will go towards, streets will go towards getting it so the delivery trucks can actually get to the houses. But it's over $100. There's all sorts of caveats on it. It's 50 cents. But, you know, looking and tying that, but what is sustainable? And that's the bigger question with any of our infrastructure conversations. What's sustainable? So... we went down a rabbit hole.
We did, which is fine. I like rabbit holes. But just to put this in perspective, you know, like Deb was saying, we have an index gas tax, and currently Minnesota's gas tax is 28.5 cents per gallon. And that's on top of the federal 18.5 cents. The interesting thing is, or 18.4 cents, but the interesting thing is, I'm not sure when that increase kicks in. It must be January 1st,
yep.
2024.
Yep.
So theoretically, on January 1st, 2024, we should see that 28.5 go up by 3%. So whatever that number is.
Yeah, it's being feathered in a little bit. So yeah, but the first 3 years, I think it's more because we have to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they said that within the next 3-4 years, mm-hmm. the gas tax will go up 5 cents.
Yes.
So we would be at 33.5 cents, probably by 2025, 2026. Actually more probably like 26, 27, because it would start in 2020.
But I'm going to put a caveat on that. Indexing is great, but keep in mind, every city that reaches that 5,000 mark gets on the system.
Right, right. So, and that's great segue,
yeah.
Getting back into how our gas tax is distributed in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah. Pie's getting bigger,
yeah,
but there's
yeah.
more slices.
And again, I would love to hear from other states, you know, whether you email me, put a comment on our website, thepublicworksnerds.com, or some comments on our LinkedIn page or what have you. But let us know how your states do that without me having to research all 50 states. It'd be great. But in Minnesota here, you know, we have what's called a highway users tax distribution fund. So all of the gas tax goes into that. The license fee goes into that. The motor vehicle sales tax goes into that. And then we also have a special, all of the sales tax that is collected for auto parts sales tax. Not all of it, but a portion of it. And that's another thing that changed is what percentage of that is going into the HUTDF. But that goes into this HUTDF, the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund. So then from there, that fund gets distributed between state highways, county state aid highways, and municipal state aid highways. And again, the municipal state aid highways is at 20% of the mileage in cities over a population of 5,000. And so after we take off some, we take an initial amount off for some research and some administration and paying all of our friends at the state aid office and MnDOT, which are great, great resource for cities and counties. We get down to the distribution of the Trunk Highway Fund, which is the state roads, gets 62% of the money. Then the County State Aid Highway Fund gets 29%, and the municipal state aid account gets 9%, and it's 9% of the 95%, because again, we had that 5% taken off the top. Now, and I remember I was giving an update to our League of Minnesota, our Transportation Alliance group in November, and we had a county engineer that was giving an update on the county side, and I get up there and I asked him, and I was talking about him, and he laid out a very good presentation on funding challenges on the county side for the county. And it was really all three of
them. We're all in this together, right, with
construction costs,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, the lowering or the erosion of the gas tax as far as revenue collection and this, that, and the other. I mean, there are a lot of things that are going on right now that make our money go not nearly as far as it used to. But I got up there and I said, you know, how many counties are there in the state of Minnesota? And there's like 80 some counties. I can't remember the exact number. I'm sorry.
I'll look it up.
But there's 80, let's say it's 84 counties. I said, okay, how many counties were there in 1958? 84 counties. How many counties are there today?
87.
87 counties. And I said, yeah. So in Minnesota, on the municipal side, we had, and I, you know, repeating those numbers, you know, we had 58 cities in 1958, and now we have 151. So the pie has always been the same. That 9%, we still have the same percentage now than we did in 1958. But now instead of dividing it up 58 ways, we're dividing it up 151 ways.
I think we need to look up lane miles then too.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
But so, you know, that's a challenging part on the municipal funding side. And the problem is we can't just change that. That is in the state's constitution, those that distribution and everything. Mm-hmm. And so we would actually have to go to the voters to change it. Mm-hmm. And you can't explain this to the voters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're just, and it's going to be, it would become a referendum on transportation funding, and is it too much or too little, and gas tax, and I don't want the gas, my gas prices go up, and so we are where we are.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not going to change.
Well, and again, are there other states that have this A2?
Right.
I mean, that would be very interesting to find out. And you brought up the research too, in one of the, it is what, one half of 1%. But I think the Minnesota is unique, and I'm going to go down another rabbit hole. The Local Road Research Board is funded through this one half of 1%, right. And that is unique in the nation. Having have been, again, I volunteer for a lot. I think I'm a, yeah. And yeah, anyway, I was on the Local Road Research Board for 5 years, and that group funds research on the stuff we've been talking about, mm-hmm. traffic speeds, you know, roundabouts, all of the above, and what's the best way to
approach things. Yeah, one of our former, our past podcast episodes was actually on social media for
yes,
Public Works
Youth. Exactly.
And that was a result of a Local Road Research Board funded study or effort to produce a guide mm-hmm. for public agencies on using social media.
Yep. And the Local Road Research Board is our R&D. I mean, yep. it's the trend that for the state of Minnesota, it's the civil engineers, the county engineers, the city engineers, state engineers, research and development wing. And not every government agency has, or, you know, municipality has that. Right. And so that's kind of a cool thing too.
Mm-hmm. And that is, like you said, that is funded through this Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund. So yeah, so the Local Road Research Board is funded through this, a great offset of this, but it just kind of gets to that point of you raise all this money up, and then it just kind of filters through this whole flow chart. And then it gets to your city.
Yep.
And sometimes it doesn't look as big as it seemed when things were getting passed, but still, we're not going to complain about getting more money.
No. And again, I think that, this is just talking about the structure. I mean, that was the purpose of our conversation, is, you know, to talk about the seam, to talk about the inner, how it intermixes with the gas tax today. And so I think that I really want to see these comments. I want to learn more about this from the nation.
Yeah, I hope people really do respond to that solicitation. I mean, the three people that are listening to it outside of the state of Minnesota. Or Australia. I know I've seen downloads in Australia. So like, how does Australia distribute their transportation funding down into the weeds, down to the local agencies?
And one of the challenges is that we've talked offline on this, is that, you know, we're talking highway, we're talking about transportation right now. And transportation is roads, it's bikeways, it's sidewalks, it's streetlights, it's signals, fill in the blank here. The other thing that's really interesting about being a part of SEAM and being a city engineer, a municipal engineer, is that's not all we do.
Right, right. That's and that's the knock I have on. It's kind of a constant rant, I guess, I give to MnDOT and the counties is, hey, listen, you guys, you spend a lot of time and effort talking about transportation because mm-hmm. that's your prime, for the MnDOT people.
Absolutely.
That's their only thing. And the county people, it's probably 80% of what they do. Now, they still have to worry about drainage, ditches. Some of them are dealing with maybe waste, solid waste.
Or an airport here and there.
Right, an airport here or there. Some facilities. But, you know, like 80% of their time and effort is on their roadways.
Yep. And Public Works, I mean, you look at what Public Works people do, what Public Works professionals do, is that we work through land use. We work through snow plowing. We work through, I guess the counties deal with snow plowing.
Yeah.
We work through, you know, whether it's buses and making sure that speeding on our roads or solid waste, you brought that up. But land use, what are the impacts of a redevelopment going to be? Policy, how do we do ride share? How are we going to implement a mobility in our city? That's the thing that is so exciting about being a municipal engineer. Every day is different, but that is also the challenge. Like I said before, when you're sitting there and you have 350 members, each community has their own personality, their own culture, their own, the council has their own priorities. We all have different ways to approach the different things that we do because they're so divergent. They're so different.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what you were talking about is, or the, a lot of the examples that you just gave are still like transportation related, but they're transportation related on a city level, which is completely different than.
And I forgot to bring up utilities. I apologize. Yeah. Water and sanitary.
Yeah. You've got sanitary sewer and water and stormwater and everything else that makes life as a municipal engineer challenging, very interesting, very diverse. But yeah, we can't.
Yeah. When you look at MnDOT, you look at the counties, they don't have to worry about water distribution lead pipes. They don't have to worry about those things. And that, because of the focus, I think that they are able to build consensus among their organizations. But I think that, you know, we are, our diversity, our different personalities that are the different cities, I think it makes us richer. Because we have so many things that influence what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So, you know, getting back to the beginning of this, you know, it's a very unique call to action, I guess, that SEEM has in getting involved in the distribution of the gas tax and really talking about how are needs calculated, how is that distribution kind of set up, and some of the other things that we can control. And MnDOT and the state aid office is really good at about engaging, you know, the actual city engineers, the practitioners at the city level, at the local level, on how that works and how should we distribute your money, and that gets into that screening board, and we have representatives. Not only do we have the officers, but then we also have the state's divided into several districts, and then we have representatives from a city engineer representative from each district. Mm-hmm. So that we make sure we get a metro perspective, we get a greater Minnesota perspective, we get a, you know, perspective from the city that's in the northeast corner and the southwest corner of this state, so that we make sure everybody's perspective is included as we talk about something. So, yeah, just kind of like in summary, I don't know, what else do you want to say? I mean, City Engineer Association seems great organization.
I cannot speak enough about how much SEEM has been helped me with leadership,
yeah,
helped me learn with networking. If you're in Minnesota and you're ever curious about, we're going to put this in the show notes, right? Mm-hmm. We would.
Show notes.
Yeah. The City Engineers Association Winter Conference is really well done, and very great topics, and it's for all walks and of engineering and even public works. So from my perspective, it has been a real value for me to be a part of the organization. So,
yeah, me too. I can't imagine what my career would have been had I not gotten involved with, and I credit my former boss, yeah, Ken Ashfeld, City Engineer, Public Works Director.
Shout out to Chuck All.
Right. We both were fortunate enough to have leaders that, you know, encouraged us and pushed us to get involved in these organizations. And had I not been as active in SEEM as I had, I don't know where I'd be today. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really owe a lot to the organization and the people that were involved in that and helping my career. And so, again, you know, we've talked about this in several episodes now. Professional organizations, wherever you are, whatever field you're in, whatever level you're at, get involved. Mm-hmm. Find an organization that speaks to you, that relates to your current position or where you want to be, and get involved, meet people, network, and grow. So, all right. Well, thank you. Been kind of a unique episode, I would say. Maybe not as well prepared as some of the other episodes we've had. But again, encourage you to put some comments, help us, inform us about how things are done in other parts of the country, even other parts of the world, as far as distributing transportation funding, particularly gas tax funding, and what organizations you have in your area that may be a little unique, you know, outside of the APWAs and the ASCEs and that, you know, some of those organizations that are, and even AWWAs that are unique to your state or region that we should know about. So,
And keep in mind, you know, again, we've been talking, focusing mainly on SEAM, but we do have our Public Works Association, our Minnesota chapter. What other organizations, as Mark said, that other communities, other states have, would be really curious to find out more what other places people can get engaged in.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Deb.
Thank you, Mark.
One last thing before we go. If you have enjoyed this episode and the podcast in general, we ask that you help us spread the word. If you're on LinkedIn, comment, put some comments in there about how your funding is done there. But don't just like the post, comment on it. It actually helps spread the word more, helps with the algorithm. And comment on our YouTube page. And that's another thing we've got to sponsor or promote more is our YouTube page. Just look up Public Works Nerds on YouTube, and all of our episodes are on video, and you can find it there. Hi. Better yet, tell your colleagues about the podcast. Thank you. We will see you next week. Nerds out.
Nerd out.